Hello, and welcome to Open Source Sex. My name is Violet Blue, and my website is tinynibbles.com. That's nibbles as in little bites. Thank you so much for tuning in. Tonight, I am very excited for a couple of reasons. First of all, tomorrow I am going to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show talking about women in porn, which is super exciting for a lot of reasons. And I'm now remembering that Oprah called this podcast one of the most popular podcasts on the internet. So she's been liking my work for quite a while now, since at least 2007. So if you get this tonight and you have a TV and you want to watch it on Tuesday the 17th, check it out, because I think it's going to be a pretty interesting episode, and it's going to knock the topic of women in porn, I think, out of the ballpark. And that said, the other reason I'm super excited is because Best Women's Erotica 2010 has come out, and I've been working on this one for a while. It's got a lot of hot erotica in it. It's, I believe, my fourth year doing this. I've got one more year to go. And then I'm going to finish my run as the editor of the series and hand it off to someone else. And it's just, I'm giving it all my heart and soul. And I think that you'll see that in the stories that have been selected for this. They are by women, for women. They are explicit. They are racy. They are about female desire and a lot of other very complex, wonderful, fun things. So anyway, that said, I also want to say something really quick about this podcast, and that's that some of you, I know, subscribe through iTunes, and you're wondering probably why they're not in numerical order in iTunes. And the reason for that is because in iTunes I only put nonfiction podcasts in open source sex, but this podcast is a combination of sex education, nonfiction sex culture, and also titillation, which means erotica. The erotica I separate out because I don't want to violate iTunes' terms of service. I want to be respectful and play within their rules. So if you want to hear the erotica that goes with this podcast, i.e. the missing numbers that you see on your screen, go to the home of my podcast, which you can find by Googling open source sex, or violetblue@libsyn.com. So anyway, that said, here's the introduction to Best Women's Erotica 2010. It's called The Chocolate Taster. More than once in the 8 years that I've been an erotica editor, someone has compared my job to that of a chocolate taster. It's a dream job, especially if you have a sweet tooth, and a full-on fantasy every day if you love chocolate. You can study the art of chocolatiering and nerd out on how chocolate is made, the history of coca, violent, romantic, and exciting, and go so far as to become ecologically minded and educate people on the greening of chocolate, as in fair trade cocoa, eco-friendly processes, etc. It sounds like a world full of sweet, endless possibilities, a job that would never resemble the drudgery of waiting tables or making plastic chairs on an assembly line 5 days a week. For me, editing erotica has been just that sweet dream. But, my friends counter, you must get tired of it. It must get old after a while, they tell me. Even chocolate lovers, they're convinced, must grow to dread having to sample every morsel of roasted goodness that's shoved under their noses, and feel forced to offer an opinion on every truffle that crosses their palate whether they're in the mood or not. Erotica, my concerned friends worry, must eventually become so tedious that it has the opposite of its intended effect. They ask me if I just can't stand to read about another seduction, if the idea of another first-time public sex encounter on the page is actually a turn-off, if reading all that erotica is actually ruining my sex life, or at the very least making me immune or worse, numb, desensitizing me to eros. It's true that I read, and after all these years have read, an unbelievable amount of erotica. Like a good chocolate taster, I study when I'm off the clock. I read other people's erotica collections to stay current with the competition. I check out what new and seasoned authors are up to. I watch erotica trends with a keen eye, such as the latest craze, explicit romance novels. I pay close attention to who's editing collections and how they're being treated by their publishers. The process is just as important to me. I found myself reading erotic anthology author and editor contracts for ebooks that I had no intention of participating in, but wanted to know if everyone was being treated fairly and paid the market rate, and by the way, they weren't. I also read erotica written by friends to help them polish stories for publication in other books. When I get inspired, I read my favorite erotica stories aloud for this podcast, Open Source Sex. On the clock, I edit at least 2 collections of erotica a year. Each one has around 20 stories in it. For award-winning, best-selling, and prestigious Best Women's Erotica, I read every one of the more than 300 story submissions I get a year for the book. I don't want a great story to slip through my grasp. And when my publisher tells me I've selected too many astoundingly hot stories for the book, as I did this year, and I have to let a couple of them go, turning down authors. I feel like I'm giving up a piece of gold. It's almost painful. I have an irrational need to see the hottest stories published, and I fight not to let go of even one gem. Of course, you must be wondering if it gets tiresome. You might be guessing that my sex life is suffering. On the contrary, I'm constantly inspired to try a new fantasy with a lover, and often read the hottest gems out loud to the hot pain au chocolat that's in my bed, savoring the exclusivity of the experience, and always the effect of the explicit storytelling. Let's just say it works. But tiresome? Okay, I'll admit that I have experienced more than the safe human allowance for exposure to bad erotica. Sometimes the writing is so bad and the scenario is so ridiculous that not only would no woman in her right mind believe the story itself, but I want to yell at the page or computer screen, "This is not Penthouse Letters!" More than once, I have been just one heaving bosom or a throbbing member or wanton love muscle away from hitting delete all in my inbox and heading to Harlequin HQ with a pitchfork, a can of gasoline, and a road flare. Yet, I am far from being desensitized. If anything, I'm hypersensitive to the best that erotica writing has to offer. I can feel it in the first two paragraphs. I understand the life of the chocolate taster who can't get enough pure cocoa, the sommelier who spends every weekend tasting for his private cellar. It's when you know how something's supposed to taste, or, in this case, the predictable arc of a story that includes sex, and you're surprised by an especially refined note or moment that turns the whole experience into feeling like you're trying a new flavor for the very first time. It happens in the best chocolate, a note of smokiness or a hint of citrus, a floral that changes the candy into a different experience by the end. It's not what it started out as. It's something more. The stories in this year's Best Women's Erotica will show you exactly what I mean. Not a single one of them is what it seems, and each of them contains a surprise flavor that turns the experience on its head while engaging you in the character's journey into a searing sexual encounter and turning you on at the same time. To borrow the phrase and tell you plainly why each story in this collection illustrates why I love my job, each one is better than chocolate, and each one is an explicit erotic surprise. In Shoeshine at Liverpool Street Station by Scarlett French, one young woman's first time having her boots shined turns into a public sex encounter with a twist. Sexual tension and release so contained that in the middle of a crowd, no one's the wiser. Louisa Hart's Prime Suspect is a superb piece of turnabout, where a female police officer turns a lineup exercise into erotic punishment and pleasure, taking the upper hand with a macho braggart co-worker, much to the satisfaction of both officers. Katie Grace's Vegging is a tense yet playful tale of woman and vegetables, which seems like a stereotype, but this is no ordinary woman and the garden isn't hers. The narrative peaks with vegetable debauchery, thievery, the thrill of getting caught, and a most unusual erotic punishment. Fantasy becomes reality in Laz McKean's Fuck the Fantasy, which moves from an ordinary day in martial arts training class to a hard-edge fuck, where one instructor teaches a student a lesson he'll never forget, and we're treated to a two-man, one-woman bisexual three-way we won't soon forget either. Amazingly, Angela Caperton's Timber is based on a real-life story where a girl working as an independent contractor doing transcription winds up with a hardcore BDSM scene to put into words, transcribing sounds, conversation, all noises in the room. She finds that the male dom not only turns her on, but brings her further into the action with every mysterious envelope she receives. Outrageous, hot and furtive are the best words to prepare you for Carrie Cannon's Straight-Laced. Here, we spend a moment in a lingerie shop, where the horny female staff occasionally quote-unquote model for clients, culminating in a scene where the dressing room is a backdrop for a model and client tryst with an unexpected lingerie-laden twist. More mysterious envelopes and even more sexual surprises await in Heidi Ciampa's Amy, in which a girl receives video DVDs by post made expressly for her voyeuristic pleasure. Each video is yet another girl submitting to one man's rough pleasure and punishment in the exact place where our narrator once kneeled for the camera and the man herself. Set in Hollywood, Alison Tyler's masterful In a Handbasket delicately balances a small girl and a big man who turn longtime friendship into a deep challenge of belief and a hammering need for release, spun around the conflict of a lapsed Catholic. It's the kind of sex on paper that makes you flutter inside and sets your nerves on fire. Anyone who's ever slept in a room where it seems your neighbors are only separated from you by cardboard will appreciate the imaginings that go on in Amy Herman's Thin Walls, where a girl listens, fantasizes, and moans during the masturbatory sessions of her hot male neighbor, finishing off with a neighborly surprise. Giving in to the unexpected is the name of the game in Amy Pearl's Rough Yet Sweet, Where the Rubber Meets the Road, a high-fetish, public, seemingly endless sexual encounter, taking place throughout a series of dates that begin at San Francisco's kinky Folsom Street Fair, blending dykes, femmes, boys, and lots of rubber meeting the road, and silicone meeting every opening our submissive heroine possesses. You can absolutely expect the unexpected in On My Knees in Barcelona by Christina Lloyd, in which a sweaty summer vacation evening in Barcelona bar turns into a pay-for-play, slippery oral encounter, and the heroine surprises herself in how far she'll go with a strange man, and willingly pays a price for her own risk and pleasure. And if you think you can predict what's going to happen in Amy Evans' Man About Town, you've got another thing coming. Here, a straight boy who likes lesbian girls, who likes trans men, finds himself masquerading as a drag king and falling for a femme lesbian who thinks he's a biological female, culminating in gender-bending sexual frustration bar none in a searing man-on-trans man, gay male, bathroom oral sex tryst like nothing you or I could ever have imagined. Just when you think the sexual surprises couldn't get any more exciting or arousing, Anastasia Mamrovadis is stripped, offers a complex story of sexual roles laid bare when a woman who comes from a strict Greek family with stricter marital traditions finds herself rooming with three men. If that wasn't taboo-breaking enough, the roommates unexpectedly strip down to one another emotionally, leading to a powerful multi-partner sexual encounter where a lot more than clothing is stripped, and every moment of the revealings is deliciously savored. Lily Harlem's Stable Manners is a tightly written surprise of secret sex taken quickly and silently amidst the chaos of horseback riding instruction. It's not riding gear that provides the surprise in KJB's superb equipment, but the right set of tools for the job when a very big, tattooed macho lover expects a night of tying up the damsel and instead finds the slowly savored, lovingly enforced view from the bottom, literally his, to be just as satisfying. Taking us to the outer limits of the unexpected is skilled Summer Marsden, who delivered a story that left my head spinning for days. Still Life is hot, explicit, arousing, and very nasty in all the ways I require a story to be, but the process our narrator goes through to get off in her head and the physical enactment of her very unusual fetish will likely have you doing a double take as well. Then there are the stories that catch you just slightly off guard but make you wish they'd come true, ASAP. Rachel Kramer Bossel's fantastic Secret Service is where Kitchen Confidential meets Best Woman's Erotica. Here, culinary arts meet oral sex in service to ladies who lunch, and then quite a bit more when the owner of a very special New York restaurant tries a random taste, in a manner of speaking, of what's on the menu. Finally, bringing the fantasies nearer to reality is the book's closer and showstopper, Shift Change, by Emerald, which makes sure that for us, a trip to Apple's Genius Bar will never, ever be the same. And the wait will seem just a little more endurable with the fragments of Emerald's multi-partner story floating wishfully and giddily through our heads the next time we have to take a number to get a minute with a genius. I hope you find this year's collection as arousing, entertaining, and truly surprising as I did, and my lovers surely will when I read them every unpredictable piece. Thank you so much for tuning in to Open Source Sex. This is Violet Blue. I'm in San Francisco. And until next time, I'll see you online.